This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now, get ready for Garden Talk, hosted by Len Giddix on WTIC News Talk 1080. Call in now with your garden questions, 860-522-WTIC or 800-966-WTIC.
Nothing's quite as charming as working in the garden in the morning. Picking sweet tomatoes and healing up potatoes in the morning. And when we take a break beneath...
Oh, and a wonderful afternoon to you, everyone. Welcome to Garden Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. What a beautiful afternoon it is. My gosh, after that.
It was really hard to tear myself away from shoveling.
Yeah.
No, wow. I like to shovel.
Come over to
I'm
your
serious.
House,
I really was.
Cry on my shoulder.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't want your job.
Well, folks, the stars aligned exactly as they should have, and the planets are happy, and we have the whole gang in today. Scott was out all night. Thank you for coming in,
and a
Scott.
Goodly portion of the wee hours of the morning.
And we'll wake you up if we need to.
Honest, Mom, I won't miss the bus.
Well, all we can say is God bless Winterberry Gardens and their employees.
Hey, to everybody in high-vis yellow that was out there yesterday, well done, Snow Warriors. Good job.
Is that what you're called, Snow Warriors?
Well, that's what it feels like. Yeah. It feels like fighting a war against an enemy you can't possibly win against.
No. It's a battle.
But so every time you win a battle, you feel good about it.
And the lovely Lisa Napolitano, and last but never least, Lobster Bob.
Yes, I'm here. I was dodging snow coming off people's
roofs. Snow bombs off the roof, yeah.
Dodging snow. Come on, people. We got a law in this state.
But it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
It wasn't coming off my
smart laws.
Mine was in a garage.
Well, folks, it's February 20th. It is National Cherry Pie Day. National Muffin Day, and the beginning of National FFA Week, Farmers of America.
Yeah, we should have some future farmers bake us some cherry pie muffins.
I mean, I think that's a good project.
It would be. Somebody should get right on it, though, because the day
little
is young.
Cherry pies in the little in a muffin tin, so they're like little individualized.
Oh, yeah. We could do that. It's also National Jell-O Week.
Ooh, I love Jell-O.
Yeah.
Just one of them feel good.
It's my favorite way to have boiled horses' hooves.
No, they don't make that out of horses' hooves anymore.
It's a secret.
Shall I say nay?
You know,
hey, to the boiled horses.
Hey, this is almost incredible. In 1872, several things happened in Massachusetts. Massachusetts just locked off.
Yeah.
Silas Noble and James Cooley of Granville, Mass, were issued a patent for the manufacturing a machine that would manufacture toothpicks.
Oh, no kidding!
Yeah, up until
I know where
then
Granville
they were just
is.
Whittled, you know.
People just take a sliver off a log on the
put 1,000 people together whittling.
Put a lot of people out of business sitting up in Granville.
Well, my question is...
That's the nature of technology, is to eliminate labor.
Flat ones or the round ones? And I did not look that up.
So
I'm going to bet you flat.
And also in 1872, Silas Baldwin of Boston, Massachusetts, was issued a patent for the first hydraulic electric elevator.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Get out of town.
Let me see. And we go on. Luther Childs Cromwell, of Cape Cod, was granted a patent for a machine to manufacture and make the square bottom baking pans that we still use today. Mm-hmm. No, not the baking pans. Excuse me, the paper bags that we.
The little paper cups.
Yeah.
Not the paper bags, like a grocery bag.
Grocery bags.
I'm sleep deprived. Go ahead, argue with me.
Are you plastic?
It's a wonder I found my way here.
And in 2009, Hershey Chocolate closed their factory in Reading, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and they moved their production to
Hershey,
Pennsylvania,
Monterrey, Mexico.
What? Get out of town?
I'm going to have to rethink how I buy my chocolate.
What? Occupied.
No, you know what?
If you want, good for something.
I got to tell you something. Everybody complains about the immigrants and stuff. The best way to keep Mexicans in Mexico is to give them jobs there. So I actually don't have a lot of problems with having some companies moving there.
Some of my best friends,
especially
are
since
damn straight,
I like
you know, and
they're great people.
They are absolutely fantastic.
Anyway,
viva la raza.
Let's see. You can buy from China or you can buy from Mexico. You choose. A lot.
2021, which is fairly recent.
Fairly.
2001. How's that?
2001.
Yeah, okay. 2001. You heard this giggle for the first time.
Which giggle?
You're supposed to giggle at this point. The cue is there.
It
is our 20th anniversary.
It didn't work in rehearsal either.
There it is.
You know, that giggle works really well with one of those parrots that replays it twice and faster. Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah, it's the 20th anniversary.
So
this is the 20th anniversary.
I mean,
there have been longer. Computer Talk's been on longer. Ray has been on longer, certainly, but we're up there. I still remember our first show. We started off with Bruce Stevens on the mic, and then in April they let us go solo. And that was a mistake.
We did a pilot with Ray
It's been downhill ever since.
Ray Dunaway, yeah.
Oh, golly.
I can't
Wow, you guys got to do a show with Ray.
Yep. I think our first show was Ray.
We were rubbing elbows at the Christmas party that they had then that they don't have now.
Yeah.
Well, that was,
I got to go to one. I went as Lisa's date.
That's right.
You did. Yeah. So one time, when we first did this, when you first asked me to do this, the funniest thing was, I thought you meant one show. Uh-huh. You want to do a radio show with me?
Uh-huh.
God only knew what I was getting into.
Yeah.
Just when you thought they were out, they pull you back.
I hadn't been in the industry in almost a year at that point because we had closed the nursery and I was working in the sign shop. And so, you know, what do you do for a living? Oh, I'm a sign maker. So then I went back to work at Pride's. Mm-hmm. Goodness.
We all wound up working at Pride.
Yeah.
We all have
at one time or another.
That's where I met Scott. I used to buy when I had the nursery.
That's right. You were my customer first and my coworker.
He was in the wholesale yard and I used to.
So there's a lot of horticultural experience, a lot of gardening experience sitting around the table here.
Just lying around, really.
Really. And some of us are half asleep. But I thought it would be a good idea. The snow is still there. We're getting close to spring. To talk today about gardening and what it gives us and how we got into it. And, of course, your questions. We'll take them as they come in. But we're going to take a break right now. We'll be back with more Garden Talk right after this. Symbolizes an attempt to control and master nature, at least in the short run. There's a haven of peace and plenty, of order and beauty, in which we project ourselves. Just as no two gardeners are alike, no two gardens are alike. And to view a garden is to view the temperament and the soul of the person who planted it. A garden is a microcosm of the outside world. Even a novice gardener becomes acutely aware of the rhythms and the cycles of nature and its ancient and overbearing control of your garden intentions. Soon enough, we discover who is cultivating whom, and that weeds are flowers too, once we get to know them. Welcome back to Garden Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. And those are our quotes from Psychology Today on gardening.
Get the heck out of town.
Yeah.
Well, they understand.
But, it's the truth. Some of the famous, by the way, if you'd like to call in and let us know, about.
No. Let's just let Loren ramble on and
gardening experience.
And Scott can sleep.
We can get carried away, 522 WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC. Those are the numbers to call. And please call in with any and all of your gardening questions, or tell us how you became a gardener. Do you remember your first garden?
I do.
I know. We all do. It's like
my parents gave me a little plot of land, a little triangle, right outside my bedroom window to do whatever I wanted in it. Yeah. And I planted flowers. And I must have been 8, 9, 10.
Yeah. That's about the time I started, too.
I was a little girl.
Probably 6 or 7.
I mean, I was always in the garden, but this was my very own.
Yeah.
And my mother said, you have to keep it nice.
Probably 6 or 7 years old, I remember a Mother's Day, and my grandparents on Dad's side took us out to buy flowers for Mom. I thought we were going to get cut flowers, but no, they bought us, first ever was a perennial. And my brother picked out a blanket flower, and I picked out a Shasta daisy. And so when we presented these to Mom, part of the thing was to go out and plant that with Mom. That's like the first kind of time I remember recognizing this plant flower thing. Oh, I get to pick a flower. Mm-hmm. Oh, and what does it do? And how big does it get? And that was the first time I remember even being vaguely aware. I knew there were shrubs around the outside of the house. And, Dad would whip out the trimmer once in a while. But Dad, despite his minor in landscaping to go with his sports coaching, he had it all worked out. He was going to be a sports coach during the year, and then in the summers he was going to landscape. So there was always that little bit of frustrated landscaper in him. But he was so old school. It was, everything was yews and junipers and,
boxes, cones, and balls.
Flowers, perennials? Nah, we didn't do that yet. That wasn't a real man's design.
Japanese yews.
Yep.
Yeah, all the way around the house.
How'd you get started, Bob?
I got started with my grandmother and my grandfather. They had a huge backyard with a garden and chickens and geese and ducks and goose. And the yard was huge. And then they sold the house, and about 10 years ago, the house went back up for sale. So I decided I'd go over there just to check the house out, see what people had done to it, and walked in the backyard. I wanted to see how big the backyard was. I think my house is bigger than the backyard was.
Oh, boy.
It's funny how it was perception.
Like you walked out the back door, and it was a two-car garage on one side. And then in back of that was a chicken coop.
Yeah.
And then it was a garden, vegetable garden. And then down the middle, there was another garden, which was put excess zucchini and summer squash in. And then mix it in with some flowers. And I thought it would be like walking in and starting a garden in a football field. When you found out all you had was a spot 6x8.
Yeah.
I went back and looked at it. I was shocked. I said, you got to be kidding me. You, you go back and remember this. As,
sure.
Yeah.
As a
actually,
child.
My earliest memory in the garden is with my grandmother also, and it was eating a red ripe tomato warm from the sun. She brought out a salt shaker. We licked it. She showed me how to, and I had to be four or five. Uh-oh. Lick the tomato, sprinkle on some salt, take a bite. And we sat there eating tomatoes.
My grandmother had a little paring knife in a garage and a salt shaker.
Oh, we didn't know. We just bit. We were peasants.
Cut the tomato in half and we put the salt on it.
Yeah.
And we'd sit there and eat it.
Yeah. I mean, her garden was quite large.
And it was like,
probably,
you know,
20 by 50.
4, 5, and 6 years old, you think a football field is like the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a chicken coop. It was huge.
Well, you were
except
smaller
where
than
I looked
two,
at the, where a chicken coop was, couldn't have been
my
much
grand,
bigger than 4 by 6.
My grandparents' chicken coop was actually my grandfather's place of residence for 6 years when he first came over. He built a shack. You could see the chestnut trees were still around.
Yeah.
And you could see the poles, the support poles, were all chestnut. Just a raw log, and he just, it was 6 by 8 and 6 feet, because he was short, 6 feet, you know, just a little shed roof, and that's what he lived in for 6 years while he built a house and saved money and got the rest of the family over.
Sure.
Yeah, my grandfather's house was an old calf barn that he converted.
Yeah, no, he built this, and then it became the chicken coop.
Well, before I was in elementary school, we rented New Britain on the second floor. No central heating. You know, you had to bring up the oil from the basement. And we rented from a family called the Turcos on Pleasant Street.
And, right down the street from where I used to live.
Right in back of the Guidas. Right in back of Guidas. The Guidas.
I was down by the school.
There, yep. Well, more up by Stanley Street. And Grandma Turco had half of the yard was garden, and that's where my first introduction was. And then we moved when I was in, I think, second grade. We moved to William Street in New Britain. And my grandfather had bought, even though he couldn't read and write, he had bought quite a bit of land at the base of Smith School on Rutherford Street. Mm-hmm. And divided the land up among the families. My uncle, my father's brother, got, I would say about 2 acres worth of land that he gardened in.
Wow.
Yeah. And I remember selling vegetables, helping him plant and whatever, and then selling vegetables on Rocky Hill Avenue in the afternoons in the summertime.
Well, part of the way my grandfather saved money was he had bought, I want to say it was like 6 acres. And he cleared a bunch, and he turned it with a shovel, and he planted corn, sweet corn. And that's what and later, when he stopped doing that, that just became the sledding hill.
Well, I remember planting corn. It was in 100-foot rows, and my uncle sitting up on the rise and watching me, and I would plant them, you know, 6 inches apart. Took me an hour to do a half a row. And so he comes down and he says, are you planting them on the right side up or are you planting them upside down? But he never told me what was upside down or if it made a difference. What a joker.
It did make a difference.
No, it didn't. 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC. Those are the numbers to call. You're listening to Garden Talk on WTIC with Scott, Lisa, Bob, and Len. Love to have you call in. Tell us all about your gardening experiences or your questions. But right now, we're going to take a hard break, and we'll be back with more Garden Talk right after this. WTIC News Talk 1080, 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC. Those are the numbers to call. But first, we have Listen to Lisa.
Hello. So, I've made brownies.
I see that.
And they have nuts in them.
Yeah.
And you know how we pre-soak our nuts? Nuts and seeds and certain things, you know, we pre-soak them. So, when they're not organic, I started doing something a little differently. And that is, I don't know if you heard that the best way to de-pesticide produce was to soak them in baking soda and water for 15 minutes.
No, I didn't.
It actually came out of the Connecticut Ag Experiment Station. If I'm not mistaken, I couldn't find that original experiment. It was a couple of years ago. But it's two teaspoons of baking bicarbonate, sodium bicarbonate baking soda per quart of water. And you drop everything in it and you let them sit for 15 minutes. And vinegar, salt, bleach, just washing, all sorts of things. It was the most effective and surprisingly effective. There was like hardly anything left of pesticide residue. So I've started for 15 minutes. The first soak that I do on my walnuts is in baking soda water. Uh-huh. And it just draws so much of the enzymes and stuff off it in that first 15, 20 minutes. And then I soak it for another 6 to 12 hours, depending on when I get to it. It
probably takes away most of the bitterness, too.
Well, that's all the enzyme inhibitors that are on the surface of the nuts. That brown coating has enzyme inhibitors. And God created that for a reason, right? God created it so that it took spring rains to wash it off to make the seed germinate. The seed won't germinate until that is washed away. Mm-hmm. And it also inhibits your body's ability to digest those nutrients. So if you can take the time to get rid of the enzyme inhibitors on the surface of...
How do you normally... there's a birthday party today. I have to make brownies. How long do you soak the walnuts?
I usually soak them 8 to 12 hours.
I was going to say overnight.
I usually do them overnight.
Well, it'd be a day older.
And the sweet... And then you rehydrate them. You know, you just throw them in an oven real low. Or I can... You want to at least get it started in an oven. You don't want them to stay moist and
you could put them in the refrigerator to keep them for a couple days a week anyway.
I like them re-crisped. Yummy deliciousness. Yeah, they're you put the two side by side, you'll never go. It's so hard to go back to just raw nuts that haven't had that done to them. But it's very nice. And so if I can't find organic walnuts, or B, can't afford organic walnuts, you put them in the baking soda water and you're washing off a lot of the fungicides that they put on nuts.
The residues.
They put fungicides on nuts to keep them from molding.
Well, yes, but it's the residues. It's not, I don't know if anything's actually intaken, and it probably is, into the plant itself. Once it's integrated.
I believe they treat the shell nuts.
Yeah, the same way they treat a potato with a PGR so it doesn't grow the eyes out on it. You know,
they treat them so that they don't develop.
I actually saw where a young girl was doing this testing with trying to grow potatoes, couldn't figure out why she couldn't just cut the potato in half that she got in the store, put it in the, and it wouldn't grow. So she actually went and started seeking out organic farmers and taking their potatoes and putting it in, and they're just bursting into, that's the problem.
They put stuff on garlic so that it doesn't sprout, and onions. They put stuff
PGRs
on
are very regular.
And I swear there's something in strawberries and cantaloupe today.
They put fungicides on raspberries and strawberries to keep them from molding.
Well, that's
that raspberry, when you pick it off, you always see that little gray haze on there. That's actually yeast.
There's stuff living on there. It's part of the ecosystem.
The strawberry is the most perishable of all.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
But I'm saying there are strawberries that are still white and part of it, and they're sweet. There's got to be a new variety out there, a new genetic.
I believe
genetic.
There is.
Well, certainly new breeding and genetics, but...
Because nobody can tell, you know, you got the thump, you got the squeeze, the belly button.
Oh, you always see people going through their rituals in the supermarket, trying to, you know, the tapping and the sniffing. And, yeah.
But remember, two teaspoons per quart of water.
You know, you
could even wash produce. Even, you know, if you're going to cut a cantaloupe, you got to figure that it's if it's been treated with something, it's on the surface.
So I was trying to figure the chemistry here, and it makes great sense. So you put sodium bicarbonate in, and now we've got a carbon sink to grab up other garbage.
It's breaking down the pesticides. They were rather surprised at how effective it was. I read it a long time ago. I do remember. I went and tried to find that original article. I should have saved it, and I didn't.
Well, that was Listen to Lisa, if you remember, long ago.
And it's about having conversations.
That's right. That is right. We got an email, by the way, that complimented us on our conversation. It's so different in the radio business to have this type of conversation.
Yeah.
It's what we do.
Yeah. Well,
long rambling
conversations about, various gardening things. You know, the majority of talk radio tends to be extremely topical, and let's drill down on this one thing. Or we just ramble about Matt.
That's right. As long as we don't talk about politics, we'll do just fine.
Here we go.
Let's leave that out of it.
Yes, please.
All right. Let's go to Sandy.
Let's agree to agree.
Lebanon. What do you think?
Yes.
Hey, Sandy. Welcome to Garden Talk.
Hey. Hi, guys. It's nice to hear
you. Hey, Sandy.
There. I think Len knows me. I'm from the Weary Weary family.
You betcha.
You remember? Anyway, Len, I want to tell you a success story. I don't have a problem. I 2 years ago, I bought a plant called Stephanotis because my mother loved it. The scent is just magnificent.
Isn't it?
It's kind of like jasmine-y. But it might be the family. I'm not sure. Anyway, I bought it from a supermarket. I don't know if I'm allowed to say which one.
Sure you are.
Yeah. Am I?
Where?
From Big Y.
Oh, yeah, okay. Big Y, yeah. There goes all our commercials from Stop and Shop.
I got it.
What commercials from Stop and Shop?
Yeah, that's why I'm saying.
I know. Anyway, I was looking for it around our area, you know, Lebanon, et cetera, Windham, whatever. And I found it there. I was shocked, and I didn't pay much for it. So this is 2 years ago. It was in bloom, not many flowers, because I got the tail end of the sale. And last year I rebloomed it. It likes a cooler temperature and less water in winter. And it likes like above 50, like 60 in a cold room. And lo and behold, I had about 50 flowers. I replanted it. And it's doing fantastic again. And I think I'm going to have to get some cut-ins and make some new plants. How's that for a success story?
I think
that's great.
That's a good one.
A wonderful success
story. Set up a roadside stand and sell them.
Hey, how about that? They're not cheap. They had them again this year. I think they were $20 for them.
Yeah.
Anyway, I grow a lot of peppers, if you guys might remember.
Oh, we remember the peppers for sure. I was just getting ready to mention it.
Yes. And guess what? I do grow wilds mostly, like hard to get Tavari, Lanceolatium, like that. Hard to get that I get from other countries. People betrayed seeds, whatever. And I planted mine about a week ago because I know you guys are going to say, don't plant that, but these take a long time to germinate. And one Tavari, which is very, very rare, took me 42 days.
Well, it all depends on the time of germination. And
sure. And you can shortcut things like with a scarification where we put it in sand and rub it a little bit to kind of break through the seed coating. Gibberellic acids. We've got all sorts of chemical interventions. But
yeah, I've tried that. But I didn't really. I did some without, some with, and I didn't really find much difference, to be honest with you.
Mm.
But I have them on a heated mat. I use a heated mat, the dome, humidity, whatever, temperature. I have the whole works. I'm like been doing this for a long time. But I want to tell you about my success with my Stephanotis. That's why I called.
Oh, Sandy, that's a wonderful fun
one. Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
I love, you know, that's gardenias, orchids. There's certain things. You pop them back. It's just like amaryllis. Yeah. It's like,
Hopefully those.
I grow orchids too, by the way. Yeah.
Well, they're surprisingly easy.
Hopefully. We got to have Sandy on the show sometime because clearly she's a better gardener than any of us.
I had a whole bedroom full of orchids, but I'm a nurse in Hartford. And I had not much time because I work 12-hour shift, night shift, whatever. And I just had to, like, cut back because it was just taking a toll on me. But I love hard-to-grow plants.
Well, so I understand.
Have a great day. Yeah.
Thank you for your hard work out there and your sacrifices. And thank you for the call.
Hopefully you'll have success with your Stephanotis raising Stephanotis, and you can sell it to that place down the street.
There you go.
Hey, we've got a. Do I read it correctly? Paul from Delaware. But, Paul, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll take your call right after this.
Oh, really?
The first supermarket supposedly appeared in the American landscape in 1946. That's not very long ago when you think about it. But until then, where did the food come from? My friends, the food was in homes, backyard gardens, local fields, farmers markets, butcher shops, and bakeries. It was in kitchen cupboards, root cellars, pantries, barns, chicken coops, and rabbit hutches. The true reward of gardening and farming, with your hands in the dirt, your head in the sun, and your heart in nature, is to feed not just the body, but the soul. Welcome back to Garden Talk, ladies and gentlemen. And those quotes were from Alfred Austin and Joel Salatin.
Oh.
Joel Salatin.
Yeah.
My brother met him.
No kidding.
I've read his book, and I highly recommend it to everyone out there. If you want to get a good taste of how it is to farm up against government who wants you to do
what
it a whole different way.
What is the name of that book? Let's say, Everything I Want to Do is Illegal
by Joel Salatin. That is the book, and it's a fun one. I recommend it. Joel's not for everybody. He gets a little overly opinionated sometimes on a couple of topics, but the man is a genius in how to work the land. Just a genius.
I like the one he was butchering his chickens outside, and the government was
under
having
a pole
conniption.
Barn. Yeah, they were.
And they're like, no, there's too many flies. And turns out he had less flies than the people. And they tested. They tested everything on him. And there was a whole lot less disease in his open-air chicken slaughterhouse.
Did the CFU, Managing for Colony Forming Units. And, he was actually – they wouldn't go in and test at the plant down the road from him. They said, well, we can't go do that. So he just went to the supermarket and bought what was supposedly brand new fresh chicken. And they brought that back and tested it and found that the CFUs were like six times.
What's a CFU?
The colony forming unit. So that's when you see a bacterial outbreak on something if you're looking at it microscopically.
Right.
You look for it. And, found it. Yeah, his stuff was incredibly cleaner. They said, no, but you're supposed to have plastic walls. And he's like, well, I don't have walls. It's a pole barn. You're supposed to have screen on the windows. He's like, check, eliminated the windows, too.
Well, that's the way it was done for a long, long time.
Well, just the UV is going to keep... The UV and the fresh air is just going to keep the inoculant down.
Well, just, the fact that it's open free, the sunshine.
He's giving us the scissors.
Which means he's tired of listening to us.
No, we have callers on the line.
Okay, let's go, baby girl.
All right. Bring them. Come on.
Let's go to Paul in Delaware. Paul, welcome to Garden Talk.
Greetings from Delaware where there's no snow cover.
No snow cover at all.
Well, we're in Delmarva. So Delmarva, we have the Chesapeake Bay on one side, and we have, I'm in Sussex County. We're about the only place in New England, the East Coast that has no snow cover.
Yeah, I was going to say Philadelphia got popped pretty good yesterday. I was wondering how you got the pass, but that explains it.
Yeah, it's Chesapeake Bay, because we just moved down here from Nautilus, Connecticut, and we're building a house, so we have the yard.
From the frozen northern tundras of Norfolk.
Oh, my goodness.
They just opened the roads up the other day from a snowstorm.
Yeah, I'm learning about down here, because it's zone 7B, so I'm learning what to put in. But I'm thinking of trying to put a couple pawpaw trees in, and have you ever tasted the fruit? I know they sell them at Broken Arrow Nursery.
Yeah,
sure.
And do you like the fruit? You ever tasted them?
Yep.
It's the closest thing to a tropical fruit, I think, we grow out of all of our natives.
Tasted like a banana to me.
That banana custard apple, touch of mango, that little kind of back note.
The other side of that card is that they're filled with these, kidney bean-sized
seeds.
So you can eat them, you can enjoy them.
And there's seed spit.
And you spit.
And then you can spit the seeds at your brother.
Yeah, it's like a watermelon.
I will tell you right now, this is a plant that is heating up online. It's starting to get a lot of looks from people who are interested in nativizing and creating food gardens. One of the leading food forest, as they say, plants that with the permacultural crowd. It's heating up. So don't spit those seeds too far. Spin them in a cup. They're worth money now.
Yeah, and it's a native plant to the East Coast, and they are fertilized by flies. And I planted a couple of pawpaws in the back a couple of years ago.
You look at that flower, you can kind of tell.
So there is a pawpaw society that is very active online. So I joined up and I asked, I had these for 2 years. I've seen them flower, but I have no fruit. Well, they have to be cross-pollinated with another variety, and I'm not sure what I got. But I know there's pawpaws growing naturally in the area.
Are there really?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a hard one to find, though. If you're going out stalking the wild pawpaw, look lowlands a little bit.
So they like the wet? So you have like
Yeah, but not
area?
Too wet. They're kind of a Goldilocks.
Like a blueberry?
There's a plenty of people.
Wet toes?
No, not so much as a blueberry. But, it's like I said, it's a Goldilocks plant. It needs that just so kind of place. It's getting towards lowland, but it's not feet wet.
I have the perfect
There's a
house.
Lot of people in the area that do have pawpaws growing, and it's an on and off success story is what it is. Mostly the deer will eat them before they get
Or hurt. Raccoons or another famous raider.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Well, good luck, Paul. You have a perfect environment for it.
There is a reason that was the bread belt of the colonies 200 years ago. That area is just that zone, that seven zone.
Yeah, moisture both sides.
It is a wonderful zone.
There's a ton of farms down through that area.
It is a wonderful zone to grow anything.
Plus, it's closer to the colonies than California.
That too.
Well, I'm just you get enough winter to kill disease, to kill back diseases and bugs and that kind of thing, but you have a long growing season and it's not so brutal as up here. Yeah.
And a sandier, a more open soil that doesn't seize up.
Well, Cape Cod is zone 7, so it's about the same as Cook.
Yeah. Very much. In fact, I think they both very well might be extenuations of what used to be the old Eastern Great Sand Plain.
Well,
which wrapped all the way up.
Let's not extrapolate.
I'm going about a couple thousand years back on that one. But, no, they've done genetic studies to find that Cape Ann, Cape Cod, the Pine Barrens in New Jersey.
They all similar?
All have this link, Long Island through its entirety.
Well, is it Long Island mostly Connecticut?
Yes, it is.
Long Island. Come on. You got to say it right.
Long Island.
There's the whole history of Delaware.
Guyland.
Yes, you can grow pawpaws.
There you go. Sorry.
Absolutely.
Yeah, have a blast.
And another thing is, because you mentioned insects, another reason I wanted to grow it is because my son was part of the butterfly club here, and he tipped me off that's the host plant of the zebra swallowtail.
That is, absolutely. One of them.
I haven't seen a zebra swallowtail in years. Tigers, yes.
Yeah, tigers more.
But zebras, not since I was a teenager.
I've seen here and there, but you're absolutely right. It's one of the ones that,
That's great.
Well, good for you, Paul.
Thank you.
Thanks much.
Take care.
Hey, thank you, for
good
calling.
Good luck in Delaware.
We don't get Delaware callers every day.
No, but let me see. We have Marcia from Ellington. Hey,
we don't get Ellington callers every day.
Talk. Hello, Marcia.
Hi, Len. How are you?
We're doing great.
I am, too. I'm sitting in my sunroom with around 35 to 45 geraniums blossoming all around me.
Oh, how cool is that?
Oh, they are so gorgeous.
Well, we have one geranium.
We have one geranium that we're splitting between the four of us right now, but it's what's working for me.
One flower, one bud.
Only three flowers. We got to figure out which one's not going to get a flower.
So there, nana, nana, nana.
What do you mean?
So, on the north side of his house.
Right. I love your giggle, Lisa. My family has owned a garden center in Ellington for well over 50 years, so we are all about gardening. But my...
My
first experience when I was in second grade, our teacher each gave us one nasturtium seed, and you know how big they are, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And planted them in cups and you know, placed them along the windowsill, and like 5 minutes they were sprouting. And they have just been my favorite plant ever since, and I've grown them for most of my 75 years, and I just wanted to share that. They're so easy and fun to grow and watch.
Yeah.
And,
I was just going to say, they would grow in a box of gravel. They need
would.
Absolutely no awesome. Soil requirement whatsoever. The more depleted the soil, the better almost on those.
Yeah. Teachers know
exactly.
That.
They don't like to be transplanted, though, so wherever you put them, they're going to be there for the year.
Yeah.
So anyway, love your show, and thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Mark. Hey, being in the family of a family-owned garden center, did they put you to work real early in life?
No, but I'm thinking of worming my way in now that I'm retired.
There you go.
All right.
You finally retired at 75, and that tells
you. Yeah, well, a
that
few tells years ago, 70, yeah.
Yeah, that tells you, you know, us gardeners are of sturdy stock.
Couple of three.
Right.
Thank
All
you,
right.
Marcia.
Take you. Thanks so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
That's funny.
Yeah, you know, it, being in the business, I mean, all of us have been in the plant business,
the green
professionally.
Industries.
Yeah,
yeah.
Some of us longer than others, and you know, but I'll tell you what it's a rewarding.
The people
experience.
In the green industry.
He doesn't mean money.
They're not there to get rich.
No. They're not there to get rich.
No, they're there because that's who they are.
Yeah.
And they're just wonderful. They're down to earth. Isn't that the truth?
It's amazing. There's two types of people in the nursery industry. The people plant people and the plant people, because they know they can't deal with people. So they dealt with the plants.
Yeah.
The plants don't answer back.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And it's just who we are.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's all good.
Good people. Okay, Tim, stay on the line. 522-WTIC. 1-800-966-WTIC. Those are the numbers to call. We have to take a break for news, weather, and sports. Then coming up, the Garden Mariachi is in the green room and getting ready for after the news. We'll be back right after this.
Lo mejor, a mujeres no me falta ni el dinero ni el amor.
Buenos tardes, damas y caballeros. It's that time again to hear the wisdom, the melodious knowledge of the Garden Mariachi, Scott Real from Winterberry Garden. Scott.
Again, my apologies to everybody in La Raza for the cultural appropriations. It wasn't my idea. One of my favorite books on garden design is a book by Jerome and Seth Mallett. It's called Reflecting Nature. And today we've been talking a little bit about why we garden, how we garden. And for me, very much, I use native plants in my gardens a lot. I do try to garden with the other species on the planet in mind. But I still think this little paragraph out of their book makes great sense to me. And I quote, a garden should have a personality and communicate a sense of place. It should be distinguishable from a raw tract of land or even from a wild landscape. Its design should reflect intelligence and creativity, but not self-consciously so. Part of the pleasure of a garden is derived from the viewing of as a human enterprise, as an artistic endeavor, and as an expression of personal taste and sensitivity. For this, the naturalistic garden should offer an interpretation of a wilderness landscape and not merely attempt to copy some piece of found scenery as exactly as possible, an approach that is unlikely to work as it is unlikely to please. It is the interpretation that we are likely to derive the greatest pleasure, seeing both nature and the garden in a new and novel way, expanding and enriching our appreciation of each. So
Versailles would be out.
That's exactly it. Look at the mental processes that were going on at that time, Len. We were talking about René Descartes was developing this Cartesian thinking, trying to apply mathematical overlays and human constructs onto the natural. It was about the domination of nature.
Well, that's what, I mean, if you were the garden of Louis the, 14th, 15th?
Uh-huh.
You would want that
in most any of those gardens at that time. But if you look at what happens, sort of the next big movement in gardening right after that is the English gardeners who are going entirely the other direction, putting in follies, fake ruins, to show that they allowed plants to climb over. It was, we are moving back away from man dominating nature to nature offering some reminders that eventually we will get there. The natural landscape became the important thing. We were using ha-has, which was a fence buried in a trench so that it wasn't visible on the landscape, but it still kept the sheep from running all over the place. I mean, this was a common feature on a lot of big estates and stuff. And that English estate garden moved us away from man dominating nature to man living more harmoniously in nature. People back in that day and age actually used to employ garden hermits. They would hire somebody to live in a little hut that they tucked way out on their estate.
See, now that's my perfect job.
Yeah, I know. And I keep looking in horse jobs all the time, and they never have
wanted.
I can see me, if I ever become a widow, that would be like my perfect job.
It, pretty sought-after job, but you had to get into the whole shtick. It was kind of like being a dozen at Sturbridge Village or something. You had to dress up and play the part. Might have gotten annoying after a while. But that's exactly what I'm talking about. We're at this place now where we are starting to look at gardening. At least some of us are, and we mentioned Douglas Ptolemy's book last time we were on, but he's not the only one. I mean, Seth's and Jerome's book, Reflecting Nature. Rick Dark, who maybe you're familiar with, the man ran Longwood Gardens for the longest time. He's a very famous garden photographer and book writer at this time. You look at the bent of his books, it's very much getting back into that natural garden, that place that not only has a representation of nature for you, but simulates nature on a good enough scale that it's actually doing the natural system good. And I wish this for you. I wish this for all of you out there. To find that place, to find that creature, you know, for a lot of people, it's monarch butterflies. God bless Nancy DeBrule and everybody at NatureWorks, and especially Diane for what they've done for that species. But hey, you know, we're out at planting Asclepias to take care of one species of plant, one species of butterfly. You plant goldenrod, there's 132 larval butterflies that eat on this thing. Almost everything nectars off of it.
You don't have to plant goldenrod.
We're seeing a lot of argument right now, especially amongst the real native plant heads, that anything with a cultivar name is automatically evil and bad. Anything you plant does some good, and any,
I mean, if it doesn't have any nectar or
food,
you know,
source larval, well, if they don't use it. But I mean, I think, I look and see people planting Annabelle hydrangeas and I just laugh, haha, because I have hydrangea arborescens at home. Looks nothing like Annabelle. And where Annabelle will get 15, 20 big round flowers on it, there isn't a speck of nectar or pollen in one of them.
Yeah, but that's why it became so popular.
Because again, we're looking at the human aesthetic overriding the natural values.
And you know what? That's okay, as long as you have a balance. You can have plants for yourself.
I concur. I read out of Seth at the beginning there is there needs to be, we try to cut ourselves out of nature because in many cases we feel so detached from it. Going to your earlier point where we were talking about the food used to come out of the garden, not out of the supermarket, and we've become so disconnected from the land. My favorite poet and essayist, Wendell Berry, God bless him, he's in his 90s, still going. Wendell talks about this all the time, this human disconnect from the land and the way that the land works leads us to make bad decisions. Wendell talks all of the time about lying fallow, how the old farmer knew that a thing to do was to leave that land and let it be.
That was in the Old Testament.
Just let it set. Yeah, exactly.
Every well, 7 years, Old Testament, you let it lie fallow.
If you go into the Torah or if you go into the Koran, you find that there's a reason that they have these food requirements. And it's not so much that they want to sell you.
The Torah is a whole lot older than the Koran. We are talking 4,000 years ago. They knew to let the land go fallow.
Well, and they also know that pork in the Middle East was probably not a good idea. That stuff goes bad fast when you get trichinosis.
Yeah, but how did they know about the lobster?
I have no idea how they got to the abominations part. I don't know. I'm not a theology guy. I'm a gardener.
Politics and religion, those two are out.
I brought it up only to demonstrate that we do have some sort of intrinsic recognition of what works and what doesn't work because we're tied in. Good example. Finland is testing for COVID right now using dogs. And people began to question the effectiveness of the dog, and they tested it. They found the dogs were 100% accurate. 100%. Everybody's like, no, nothing's 100. Nothing's 100. And they went back and tested again. 100%. Why is that? Because that machine that they were working on, it's maybe 40 years old. That dog has been working on its skill set for 40,000 years. Anyway. So the natural systems, let's try to fit in and work with them rather than working against them.
Say, Scott.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But would you like to apologize to Tim from Manchester?
Since Why?
You took up all his time.
Sorry, Tim.
Tim, sorry. We didn't forget you.
You're on a roll.
Once he gets
I was on a roll. I was on a 20th anniversary roll. Hey, all right, get out the soapbox.
We're going to take a short break, Tim, and then we're going to come back exclusively for you. No other reason. We'll be back right after this. Simply does not allow you to become mentally old because there are too many hopes and dreams yet to be realized. You see, in every gardener, there's a child who believes in the seed fairy. A society grows when old men plant trees whose shade they will never sit in. Indeed, to plant a garden is to believe in tomorrow. It seems peculiar to me why we try to explain miracles to our children when you can have them plant a garden and have them discover miracles for themselves. For if you look deep into nature, you will understand everything better. As a gardener, we are among those who believe that much of the evidence of God exists, that God exists, has been planted. If you believe that God is everywhere, you might look for him in a church. But if you wonder if God is anywhere, then you might better look for him in the garden. Welcome back to Garden Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. And that was a compilation of quotes from Alan Armitage, Albert Einstein, Catherine Hepburn, and Robert Brault.
So. I've always said planting a seed is a
It is. It is. Yeah. I particularly like the and that was a Greek proverb where, it's a test of your society and the depth of society when an old man goes out and plants a tree that he'll never appreciate.
Yeah. You know?
Welcome back to Garden Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. Now, Scott, as promised, we're going to go to Tim.
Let's call this segment Listen to Tim.
Listen to Tim. Tim from Manchester, welcome to Garden Talk. Thanks for waiting, buddy.
Hi. Hello, Tim.
Hey, Tim.
Yeah, just a little bit. So listen, this is Tim from Manchester, England, maybe.
Okay.
But, you know, I called like a month ago.
Is that a Cockney accent I hear?
It was a cross-pollination question about my catnip, which I grow regularly.
With cannabis.
The, potential. Yeah, that's the one.
I remember.
So listen, I now that we're closer to this whole recreational thing, I was in the local pet store today, and I found catnip that specifically said does not contain CBT or THC. And I'm just wondering, is that because it could actually happen and we could have something together?
I thought you were going to say it doesn't have CBT or THC, so what good is it? You know,
my cat wouldn't like it either way, but I'm just saying, there's got to be a way, right?
Well, we are
going to have a society of growers here in Connecticut, and we have to have some kind of guidance.
There's plenty of guidance out there. Hemp was grown because, I mean, there was hemp rope. There's hemp string.
Well, it was
by right now.
Cordage back in the day, and that was...
Oh, and cloth. Are
ship,
you kidding?
That sailing ship was the most highly technical
I had a hemp vest once that was the most rugged. It felt like linen, but it wore like iron.
There is nothing more wonderful for taking down a tree than a hemp rope. My uncle and my father had these wonderful hemp ropes. They used to have a rope tow. We had the hill.
Yeah,
and they my uncle made a rope tow out of tire rims and a motor, and it had a hemp rope that kids kept stealing.
Tim, I'm not understanding the question. I guess what do you want to do? You want a cross?
He really wants this hybrid. My fear is we're not going to get that without genetic engineering. That's exactly.
No,
I think Lisa's exactly right.
Let me put it out there, my friends. Yeah. I want righteous bud for me and my cat, and we can sit around all day.
Well, you know,
one plant serves all.
I gotta tell you,
it dovetails real nice with my talk.
I know somebody whose old cat, old, you know, like 21-year-old cat, Gino, used to walk around really sore, and this person found a car. He was walking his dog, and a truck drove by, and a bag of bud fell off back of the truck, and he picked it up, and he's like, I wonder. So he sprinkled a little bit of it on the cat's food, and that cat lived another year and a half. And whenever he was in a lot of pain, my brother would give him a little of it, and it worked great.
Yeah, if we weren't supposed to do it, why does our brain have an endocannabinoid system?
And I hurt right now.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, screw the catnip, just go with a pot.
Solution to the problem.
Whole thing is it's not so much about the recreational part of marijuana. It is about the medicinal part of marijuana. And it's a sin that it was taken away. And the doctors wrote to Congress when they were planning
got arrested with the first
wave
for refusing.
No, the AMA sent a letter to Congress asking them not to take it out of their pharmacopeia. Yeah. We can't even begin to understand.
It was the most prescribed thing for
it was in
women
everything.
In particular.
It was in everything, all the little potions, because doctors used to make their own.
So was opium, folks.
Back in the day.
But you know
Coke and Coca-Cola.
But there's a difference between, you know, opium used as a medicinal drug. And we still use opiates to this day.
And clearly what we're finding right now is the natural form is nowhere near as deadly as the man-made simulacrums.
My mother, you gave her any kind of opiate and she was off in La La Land. That killed her. Do you know 10% of people can't metabolize opiates so that it actually gives them pain. It gave my mother pain.
You don't care. When you're on a prescription opiate.
No. Not if you can't metabolize it. So if you saw my mother on what morphine or any of that kind of thing, it was terrible. And because marijuana when she was dying was illegal. I couldn't even get her any.
Yeah.
And I would have gotten her some CBD or something, but you couldn't. And a federal nursing home that receives federal funds cannot use it.
Yeah.
So it was a terror. And my nephew lived out on the West Coast and was actually a pot grower. And he's like, well, why don't you give her some CBD? I'm like, well, what's CBD? You know, I didn't know.
Sure.
And there was no. And she managed her pain till the very last day using Tylenol. Mm-hmm. That was all they had for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, my brother's actually on the medical side of this. We hope to have him on for a show here sometime soon.
Sure.
Talk a little bit just about that, about the medicinal sides. And that's my brother's biggest argument is he's like, you know, now don't be floral centric. He likes to, you know, it's for the potheads, it's all about the flower and the THC. And he wants to quantify both sides of every. So instead of, you know, going in and, oh, I'd like some of the sticky bubble gum, please. No, you're going in to get either a CBD or THC or a particular balance and have it, you know.
And they found that the one for pain is typically 50-50, 50 CBD, 50 THC in that realm. And it's
but often for people that are just dealing with inflammations or one of the very first strains that was ever bred, that to become commercially viable was Charlotte's Web, named for a little girl in New Jersey who was having uncontrollable seizures. But again, when they first started giving her, making their own oils and butters out of pot itself, Charlotte was maybe just a little too happy and relaxed during the day. So some breeders and growers out in Colorado came up with this strain. Almost no THC, almost completely CBD. That's the kind of thinking that we need to adopt. But in my brother's case, he's, you know, let's take the flowers right out of it. Let's get this into a form that doctors feel comfortable prescribing, that it's measured and dosed so we know exactly what we're doing.
But see, my problem with that is I should be able to grow my own medicine.
And you can soon enough.
That's in Connecticut. We can't grow our own.
Not yet.
How many
doctors?
I think that'll change.
How many doctors out there in the
There's universe? Very few that are comfortable with the prescribing side because we still have the federal oversight hanging over us, and this too must pass.
It must pass.
President Biden is taking it under consideration, but I haven't heard anybody who's, oh, it's going to get done soon.
It's not that at all.
It's
they
little
don't,
obvious.
They don't. Prescribe herbs unless you're a naturopath.
Yeah.
You don't just prescribe herbs. Yeah. You prescribe something from the medicine.
Well, that's exactly my brother's point, and that's exactly why he'd like to see, as Lisa would say, take it from the recreational and move it more to the medicinal. I think it's a conversation worth having, and hey, I got an expert in the family.
Well, I don't know about you, Bob, but I'd like another brownie after this conversation.
There was nothing in munchies? Those brownies except for a bunch of nuts and some chocolate chips.
We got a bunch of nuts over here.
Yeah, a bunch of nuts seems appropriate.
522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC. Maybe you'd like to tell us how you started gardening. Maybe you'd like to tell us something about
Or maybe you're a nut who just wants to hang out with somebody
on. I mean, we take all comers.
Sometimes you feel like a nut.
522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC. It's the 20th anniversary of this show, and
I can't stand it. We're so old.
I can't tell you how much this show has degraded since.
No,
Rayona, come get your show back.
Oh my goodness, Rayona Hobbs, that's right.
I know.
Yeah.
Oh goodness.
But we have to take a short break for news, weather, sports, few commercials. But like it or not, we'll be back with more right after this. Garden Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. That music means it's time for the Tips of the Week, brought to you by absolutely nobody but us. Lobster Bob, what do you got for us today?
Well, getting near that time of the year where you can
See how many deer you actually have in your yard.
You know how many I counted the other night?
Huh?
10 of them in a parade through the back.
I had 8 of them in my backyard.
Well, I got 10.
Nanny man. Yes, but he's in Berlin.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh,
country. I'm in a city.
1 a.m. in the wilds of West Simsbury yesterday. I heard a pack of coyotes who appeared to be running at deer from what it sounded like and how fast things were moving.
But anyway,
A scary noise that, when you're out there kind of on your lonesome in the woods.
Bob's talking about deer.
Yes,
he is. Now you're up and you can see, especially at night with the lights off outside, the snow is nice and white, and the deer stand out like a sore thumb.
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do.
And you can see them walking up. Now you can see them where they are. They're around the
rhododendron, your camassiparis, your arborvitae.
Eating my wife's holly.
They are
now eating my wife's rhododendrons.
Yeah.
And they did take a bunch off her scintillation.
Yeah, they like scintillation. I don't know why.
It's that time of year where they're running out of food.
We're looking out the window, and there's 8 deer. So I said, I'm going to get my orange juice container. No. I want to watch the deer. No. You want to watch them? Are you going to watch them when they go over and eat your plants, too? So a trick I found, and it does work, get a plastic, even a milk jug. I use an orange juice container because it's got a bigger top on it with a big cap. I got some stones, and I put some stones in there. Walk out the back door quietly and take that milk container and shake and rattle it. And all those stones bounce around and those deer take off like it's no tomorrow.
It's a great idea.
You have to shoot them.
A deer rattle.
A deer rattle. What a great idea.
Well, they spook so easily. I mean, you can literally...
Are you kidding me? I was sitting
out. They don't spook as easily as they used to. I agree.
And one's just looking at. He came walking. He knew I was there. He's walking. He's 20 feet from me. I'm going,
what you got?
What are you thinking? What do you think you're doing? I'm like, get out of here. And he's just staring at me.
Standing there looking
He knew you weren't going to jump out of the tub and run after him naked.
That would have scared him.
Thanks, Bob. Oof. Thanks very much.
Oof, that's going to leave a mark.
Oh, yeah. I can feel the hate mail coming in now. Anyway.
Okay.
Well, this garden tip
only took 20 years to get here.
It's disintegrating quickly. We should just get to the rest of the tips. As
Okay, so first would be it's your territory market. But the other one is your lovely wife posted on Facebook, and I'm like, oh, it is that time of year. And she had gone and taken pussy willow cuttings and brought them in to force them.
Excuse me, let me correct you on that.
Oh, you got them and you gave them to her?
Risked my life at the edge of the stream.
Oh, please. So... You risked your life. But she was the smart one, smart enough to share that with everybody else that, you know, she was forcing the pussy willows. And this is my mom always forced forsythia. And nothing made my mom happier than going out and taking a bunch of cuttings. And she would take this big old tall vase and she'd have 3.5 foot whips of forsythia stuck in that vase. And it's just... What takes a week and a half, two weeks, and all of a sudden you got this.
I picked those 3 days ago.
Yeah, so you can
flowering almond,
flowering almond, quince. Quince is very pretty.
Yep.
Or if you're going to be pruning your apples, peaches, plums, any of that, you can take those cuttings.
I have some dormant prunings coming up this week.
Grapes are on my list.
Yeah,
this weekend,
quince
is
very oriental.
Quince
when you
is
do
beautiful.
It.
Yes.
So, I mean, now's a nice time to go out there and bring some color in your house.
And there's no flower show.
Plum is traditional this time of year in Asia.
Yeah. They're just wonderful.
One of the three friends of winter.
You can try just
plum and pine.
Almost anything that's at early spring flowering can be forced without a lot of trouble.
Yeah. Oh, I just heard on, I was watching TV this morning, And the Daffodil Festival in
is Meriden canceled.
Has been canceled.
Yeah. That's just the saddest
not
thing.
Surprising.
Yeah.
But you know what?
The it daffodils might be a fish. Will be there.
The daffodils will be there. The vendors might not be there, but the flowers
the
will.
The flowers so will be in that park.
Go
absolutely
hang out.
So there's still going to be a daffodil
festival. Yep, there will be. Whether or not there's any vendors, there's still going to be a festival.
Nobody told the flowers.
No. But they'll all be wearing little masks.
And speaking of flowers, we should mention real quick that while we were in the show today, we got a word from our dear friend Christy Gonzalez, who unfortunately had to cancel the flower show this year, but she's definitely on for next
year.
Well,
as long as the convention center is on.
Yeah, as long as the convention center is on.
But yes.
So my gardening tip for the week, for the rest of what shall remain winter, is be kind to your snow providers. Look for those flashing yellow lights, folks. You know, you don't know. This is a sleep-deprived person on far too much caffeine. And he's got that flashing yellow light on there. It really is a warning. This is what I'm telling you, deep from inside the industry. Yes, watch out for those guys. Stay out of their ways. But be nice to them. We've been essential workers since the very, very start. And hey, not all heroes wear capes. A lot of us wear high-vis yellow.
Well, I have to congratulate you for staying alert and awake and talkative.
Huh? What? Oh, talkative. You can't stop me in my sleep, right? So,
do you talk in your sleep?
We have to
of course he talks
in his sleep. I have been told it does happen on occasion.
Well, I have one short tip, and that is avalanches. Watch out for the avalanches. Not on the mountains, but off your eaves. And if you...
I took a chunk of ice to the head.
Yeah. If you like your if you like your foundation plantings and you have not protected them, you might want to look and see what's hanging over them, because that's an easy split of an arborvitae. It's an easy split of a Japanese maple. And there's ways to repair some of them, but not all. Mm. So,
It's a good idea to keep it.
That's a good word. And, we've been called out to a couple of emergency ice dams. Yeah. So while you're up there looking at what's overhanging the plants, maybe look at what's overhanging the drain, too.
There you go. But it's melting now, so it's sliding off. Mm. And it's coming.
Especially
down.
If you got a metal roof.
Oh, yeah. All right. And that's the Garden Talk tips of the week. Say, before we go to another break, there's a couple of things about gardening that I want to bring up. Mainly it's a great physical exercise. It's not one of those things where you go out and run a marathon, where you lift weights. No, it's a repetitive low to medium impact exercise. You're bending, one of my favorite exercises. You're kneeling. Yeah, which we all learned.
Hello,
which any
feet.
Good Catholic is good at.
That's right. Catholics are good at gardening because they're good at kneeling. And And it's slow motion. You know, it's constant.
And it's and you're breathing because it's, you know, you're deep breathing. Right. It's just wonderful.
Kneeling. I think, we need to step away from the kneeling. It's ruining a lot of knees out there. I, for one, have adopted the Asian squat, which if you go ahead. I was going to say, careful when you put this one into the interwebs. The Asian squat, feet go outside the shoulders and then just drop the butt.
Yeah, easy.
And you see people, hey, it's a lot easier than kneeling.
Or save your knee. Save the knee, correct? Build a raised bed garden.
Build a raised bed garden. There's another
thing.
Actually, you know, I got a little kid's stool at a tag sale, and I carry it around. I put a padding on it, and I sit my little butt on it. That's how I do my chamomile.
I ruined my knees installing the slate floor 30 years ago, and now I'm refinishing it, and it reminds me every day.
Yeah, it will.
Yeah. Gardening can make you a better person.
Oh, yes, no doubt. It can. It's absolutely called humility.
Well, humility.
Because you realize that your plans only mean so much in the grand scheme of things.
That's right. And,
you know how to make God laugh, right?
Let's see. It can bring, we all know it can bring people together because that's how we got
here. Here.
And remember, the community gardens are great. Let me see. Public gardening is a boon to the community. I mean, you get people together talking about stuff. donating stuff. What a perfect year next year is going to be to help your neighbors with the abundance that comes out of your garden. Don't sell it on the side of the roadside.
No,
give
just
it away.
Give it on the side of the road. Actually, what's amazing is that, like, the senior centers and stuff are actually taking your produce. There was a couple years there where homeless shelter, the soup kitchens,
they couldn't take it.
Right. They were, the federal government decided you weren't allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. So,
Yeah. They not all things should be about capitalism. Thank you.
Well, the feds
that's,
are just.
That's all the lobbyists who don't want you to.
Row for the hungry, et cetera, et cetera. There's good people doing good work out there.
We're going to take a short break, and then we have Rob Townsend, I'll bet, and Mark on the cell phone.
Just the man I want to talk to.
When we come back, we'll talk to them. What do you say?
Sounds like a plan.
We'll be back right after this.
So many songs about rainbows and what's on the other side. Rainbows are visions, but only illusions, and rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to believe it. I know their wrong way and see. Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me.
And welcome back to Garden Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. Yeah, the whole gang's here today. Scott, Lisa, Lobster Bob. And we're just enjoying the heck out of this wonderful afternoon. We hope you are, too. Let's go to Rob. Hey, Rob, welcome to Garden Talk. Thanks for calling in, man.
How are you doing, Len?
We're doing well. We're doing well. How are you doing? I mean,
we're used to meeting up.
There it is, brother.
You're not sitting out in back of the convention center, are you?
21 years. Rocking. I did. 21 years I did the flower show, and this is the first year we haven't done it, and I'm sad.
Yeah, but this is the year you were supposed to win first prize.
Again.
Yeah, I only did it six times.
Yeah. You know, you've got to let somebody else have a turn once in a while.
Yeah, I'm sad, but you know, what are you going to do? Christy called me Wednesday night, and we're gearing up for 2022.
Hear, hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What can you do?
Not much. Go with the punches.
I'm tired of masks. I'm tired of social distancing. I'm tired of 2 weeks to flatten the curve.
Turn to do that. I thought about that, and I think even next year at this time, we'll probably be wearing masks.
It might still be. Yeah.
Who knows?
I hate masks. I can't do it. I can't breathe.
Yeah. It's,
I'm but, with you, Rob.
I had a killer display all lined up for this year, something that I've never done before, something different.
Yeah. And, we always do something different.
Yeah. I'm going to have to wait till next year, I guess.
Yeah. And you know, ladies and gentlemen, you may or may not realize how far in advance these displays are planned out, and the plants are forced. So they have
sometimes 6 months to a year and even more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and once they're forced, guess what? You better keep them warm until spring. Otherwise, you won't have them.
Well, and not only that. So you have to make sure you have the plants to force, you know, so it's at least 6 months in advance.
Oh,
you have to make sure you have
the plants in December.
Yeah.
In my greenhouse, some of them in the trees, the Japanese maples, you have to do months in advance before the show.
Yeah,
sure.
Almost not let them go to sleep, you know.
No, they have to go to sleep, so you have to throw them in a freezer or something to get them their cold because they need
a
certain amount of time.
You have to slow them down. Forcing is a science and an art form. And it's not for the faint-hearted.
No.
Then you got to wake them up.
Actually, more of an art form than a science.
Truly.
Yes. Well, it's a little bit of everything, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of math. You got to figure out when it's like
that. You need sunlight, you need heat.
You know, I remember the one time I was helping force plants for the Pride show, and there were some that we were just making room, and they used to be on the ground. And Chris Helene was, and he had them on the ground. I was helping him out, and some of them had been up on a board. There was a board there, so, yeah. And the ones on the board were like 2 weeks ahead of the ones on the ground. Mm-hmm. And so after
unless
that,
you have radiant heat, yeah.
Then we lifted them all up and put them on pallets.
Yeah, sometimes it's better to keep them off the ground.
Yeah,
and that's standard operating procedure.
Right, right.
Yeah. Lisa, I still have your Jane Deere.
He bought my tractor.
Oh, he did?
I did. Oh, that's such a beautiful tractor. I love
yes,
that baby.
It was.
It's still running good.
It doesn't look as good
as it did when I bought it from you, but it still runs great.
I used to wax that baby when I owned it.
I know.
Once a year.
Twice a year, you said. It got beat up a little bit, but it still runs.
Of course it does.
You got to love it. You got to have garden humor.
You do.
Well, we're looking forward to the flower show next year, and I feel so bad that we're not doing this year. I'm heartbroken over that.
Yeah,
a lot of people are.
Because she's so good.
It used to get us through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Christy's one of the good ones.
We're doing a flower show.
Yeah, I had no idea that how much that woman knew about a gardening and flower show until we bumped into each other up at the main flower show.
Yeah.
And I said, "What do you see?" And she detailed it down to me. Like, we talked for 15 minutes while she told me, this is what I'm seeing, and I don't understand. How can they do this? How can they be doing this? How can they be paying the exhibitors? How can they be... And 2 years later, the main flower show was in the market.
Her whole family, the Gonzalez family, they're such great promoters, and they're such good people, and they're family to me.
Sure.
We go out with George and Barbara for dinner, and they're just so nice. We've been up to Christy and Keith's place. I'm so glad that she hooked up with Keith, and it's a family environment. I love the flower show.
Yes,
it's part of my life, and it's been the best part of my life.
And she's so excited about her farm out there that
she's
keeping her busy.
Yeah.
Keeping her busy.
They're just amazing people. I love them.
Yeah, they
and
are.
I love the show.
Yeah. Well, Rob Townsend, and why don't you, in case we like a water garden, why don't you tell us where we could get the best water garden in Connecticut?
I'm sorry, you're breaking up. Len, you're breaking up. Or either it's probably my phone because I'm on the cell phone. I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. Where can we get the best water gardens in Connecticut?
From Aquascapes of Connecticut. There's no better. I am the pond maestro.
I love it
when a pond comes together.
I have a 20-year-old lotus that needs to be split up and repotted, so I got to talk to you.
Well, you give me a call. We'll take care of you, Lisa. I got your tractor. I might as well take care of your lotus.
There
make
you
sure
go.
You got that, make sure you got
you
that tractor all waxed
day.
Up before she comes down.
Oh, well, we got to wait till spring when I lift the pot up. So.
Thanks a lot, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
Be good.
You bet.
One of the good ones
do
there.
Do we have to be good?
He's one of the good ones there, for
yeah,
sure.
I know,
you know, and I was talking about nature in the garden.
Yeah.
There is no better way to bring nature in your garden than to provide some water.
Oh, my goodness, huh?
And
water brings a whole new element.
You know what the best one is?
New elements.
I think my favorite thing that comes out of having a water garden in your on your property are dragonflies.
Yeah, here.
The dragonflies that come in, because the larval stage, the baby stage, is in the water.
Yeah.
They're like a little, they look like a little lobster. And it's just a different. It becomes completely different when you have them there.
In particular, with bats and the rough shape that they are in Connecticut here, there is no better mosquito beater than a dragonfly.
Yep.
Well, there's two things come to mind. First of all, for you fishermen, a dragonfly larva is called a helgramite.
Yeah.
And you have lures that imitate those and
flies
that imitate. Oh yeah. And second of all, we think. Here on the news, Eastern equine encephalitis
yes.
and the mosquitoes, and oh my. Well, they're already here. If you start in springtime to bring the dragonflies in and other bats and whatever.
And even fish. Throw a couple goldfish in.
Sure.
You don't need anything fancy. You go get the dollar goldfish.
Too.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's in the larval stage.
Yep.
And then you're starting to work work the QR right there.
And God only knows where they come from, but the next thing you know, you got some green frogs in your garden, and you don't have any clothes.
I must have 40 of them this year.
Yeah, they're awesome. And they'll let you pick them up if you're real if you're real quiet and just lift them up from underneath. They'll sit in your hand. You'll get to know them.
All you need is some water and a tomato steak, and you'll have the greatest dragonfly collection going.
Yeah, that vertical element that they can perch on and watch over the pond.
And then just watch them. They'll fly up and grab something.
I like Iris versicolor for that myself.
Yep. Really?
Iris versicolor in, you will see
Bar Park. Or an echinacea. An echinacea sitting there straight and tall, and they'll perch on the echinacea.
I like the Iris versicolor because you can stick her in the edge of the water.
No, it's got a more complicated name. That's why.
Oh, no. It's our blue flag iris.
Yes.
There you go.
It's our native blue flag iris.
Yes. Yeah. And they're very pretty. And
which
yes,
in many
they
places
do.
Has been.
And they help keep the water clean, no less.
Yep.
So there you go.
Yeah, I actually planted some last year. I love them. And they propagate very well. I've got seeds.
Another one that I like to put in the edge of the pond are cardinal flower. That's another one.
Another great native that loves the edge of the water.
That's a little bit more finicky.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Oh, I never. You got to plant it just with the crown just
the
above.
The best stand I've ever seen in Connecticut is grown in a gravel bank right on the bend of a stream where that gravel gets left on the inside.
Yep.
And it's 20 feet long and it's 10 feet deep and it's just absolutely nuts. So I've always I think that's the cardinal flower thing. I think because it wants that. If you're going to put it as a submerged or semi-submerged plant, I think you want it in a gravelly, looser, sandier soil rather than a garden soil.
I hate to tell you this, I have them growing all over my house. They self-sow freely around my house.
I'll be over in the spring here.
Yeah, I'll give you some babies. All you could possibly want.
Well, Bob, it's the end of another wonderful show.
Oh, and the end of the second decade.
And
the beginning of the third.
And the beginning of the next show is the beginning of the third decade.
No, this is the beginning of the third.
Oh, I suppose it is, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, well.
I'm glad I could stay awake through it all.
Well, if not, we'll just throw you in the back of the
pickup. Let's hope any of our listeners could, too. Bob, you know what we say, don't you, after 20 years?
Shovel the snow out of your garden, and then you can go into your garden, and we'll see you there.
We'll see you in the garden, everyone. God bless. Bye-bye.